Hi, and welcome to another installment of the Panic Attack Recovery Newsletter. I'm Matthew Wagner. This is installment number 4. First, a quick recap. In the last installment, I discussed cognitive behavioral therapy, otherwise known as CBT. In a nutshell, the process involves locating the cognitive distortions that are driving your anxiety, panic attacks, and agoraphobia, and then substituting healthier and more realistic thoughts that make you feel better. The premise of CBT is that your thoughts are driving your emotions, so if you can improve your thinking, you will improve how you feel. This has wonderful implications. As previously mentioned, the idea is that our thoughts cause our emotions, and if we can look at our own thoughts, identify the cognitive distortions that are present, and substitute healthier thoughts, we can feel better. So today, as promised, we're going to delve deeper into CBT and look at a more in-depth example of some anxiety-producing thoughts by looking at a question which comes from a subscriber of the newsletter. So what I'll do is I'll start out by reading the question to you and will allow you to then work through this collaboratively with me. You can pause the podcast, try and do it on your own, and then come back. I would recommend doing that. One thing I will just state at this point is that you'll notice at the end, I will give you the opportunity yourself to ask a question. Part of my approach is an interactive approach, so I allow subscribers to ask questions and then have questions. The answers to questions appear in future installments, so you can certainly feel free to do that. So let's look at the question, and I will begin the question. So here's the quote, my fear is that, okay, I'll start again. So let's look at the question. And the question, I quote, my fear is whether I'm having a panic attack or just going mad. I feel as if there is no way out of this fear. I could be driving home and I get a feeling over me and I get very scared. I have not been told by docs that I suffer panic attacks, but had blood tests and all came back fine. What tests are there for panic attacks, anxiety? Will I ever get my life back to normal? Okay. So my response, first point is that this person asked if there's a test for anxiety and has indicated that doctors had told her, he or she, that his or her blood tests are normal. I assume the doctors would have also done a physical exam. So the first thing I need to stress is that this is very, very reassuring news if there's been a physical exam and the blood test which revealed nothing. This person should now proceed to a psychologist who can diagnose the panic attacks and anxiety if they have not been diagnosed. This person should now proceed to a psychologist who can diagnose the panic attacks and anxiety. The psychologist will do an assessment as part of their process and can then make the diagnosis. That would be the test for panic attacks and anxiety. For the purpose of a learning example, let's say that the above statement was made by an individual with the name John. Now, obviously, the person's true identity will be held in confidence. What we are going to do is use cognitive behavioral therapy to analyze the thoughts behind the statement to locate the cognitive distortions and then substitute healthier thoughts that can make us feel better. You'll notice I'll use terms like we and us because this has to be a collaborative process. In order for this to work, you have to go through it with me. If you don't do this, then it really has a minimal effect because you're just simply reading along. It might have some of an effect, but by all means, you can, at first listen to the podcast, just listen to it through, listen to the whole thing through to the end, but you definitely want to go away and do it on your own too, and you can always come back and listen again, and then it'll probably be more valuable to do so. So let's just take a key point of the statement. The person said, I feel as if there is no way out of this fear. I could be driving home and I get a feeling over me and I get very scared. Okay. First, I would recommend that you look at the list of cognitive distortions that are present at the end of the textual version of this installment. So you would have been led to this audio installment via an email that was sent to you. You can go to the bottom of that textual email and you'll actually see a list of cognitive distortions. So what I would recommend you do is you review the list of cognitive distortions and then try to locate what possible distortions might be present in John's thinking before continuing along. So you would just pause the podcast or stop the podcast installment here and then come back. I will give you a hint before you go, though. there is more than one distortion present. So once you've gone and looked at cognitive distortions, what is possible, write them down or type them out, and then come back to this spot. So I'll just pause for a minute. I'm hoping that you're going to go away and do that and then come back. Okay, welcome back. I hope you really have given this a try yourself. If you guess that the following four distortions are present, then you're right. Number one, all or nothing thinking. Number two, overgeneralization. Number three, emotional reasoning. Number four, making should statements. Now, let's look specifically at how each distortion is actually present in this statement, and then we'll look at some alternative and more realistic thoughts. Number one, all or nothing thinking. By stating that there is no way out of the fear or feeling this way, John is making an absolute statement, which is exactly what all or nothing thinking refers to, thinking in absolute terms. Number two, overgeneralization. John is taking this episode and generalizing it to the rest of his life, thus making a wide generalization. Number three, emotional reasoning. Notice one key word that John uses is feel. This is significant because emotional reasoning is making an argument on the basis of how one feels, not on objective evidence. Number four, making should statements. This is another distortion. The premise behind John's argument is that he shouldn't feel this way when driving home. The truth is that by beating himself up, by stating he shouldn't feel this way, he's actually exacerbating his anxiety. Should statements refer to the way one thinks in a situation, should statements refer to the way one thinks a situation should unfold rather than the actual situation one is faced with? So, in other words, you think something should have went a certain way, it doesn't, and that really upsets you, that would be a should statement. Now, this is something where you have to kind of be a bit of a detective sometimes. These thoughts are not going to be explicit to you. You're going to really have to think about, okay, what are some possible thoughts that are driving my feelings here, my emotions, and what could be some other thoughts? And you'll have to really look for these things. And that's what I would have done when going through this example that John, the individual we're calling John, has submitted for an answer. Now let's try to generate some alternative, more accurate thoughts that we can substitute in place of the ones containing distortions. Again, before continuing, try to generate some on your own. Once you've done this, write them down or type them out, and then come back to the spot. I'll pause the tape for you to do so, and you can just pause it as well. Okay, welcome back again. I hope you've actually done this. Here are some alternatives. Just because at the present time, John cannot think of techniques to deal with his panic attacks, in reality, it does not mean there's no way out of them. There are many techniques out there, and many people have indeed gotten over panic attacks. Rather than John concluding that there is no way out of the fear, he can acknowledge that while he is definitely feeling anxious, there is no real evidence to suggest that he will always feel this way. Just because John feels that there is no way out of the fear does not make it so. He is reasoning on the basis of his emotions, not according to objective reality. John has a should rule in mind that he should not feel anxious doing simple tasks like driving. However, the truth is, he is feeling anxious, and that's okay. This does not mean he is inadequate in any way, nor that he will always be anxious doing routine tasks. The truth is, by buying into the belief that he shouldn't feel anxious, he feeds his anxiety. Simply by learning to accept his anxiety, it will lessen. As you are probably starting to see, it is critical to locate the cognitive distortions in your thinking. You can see that they represent a locked-in belief that can be changed, and for the better. Well, it's certainly not realistic to think that you can do this once and instantly get better. Over time, this process, though, can definitely be a great way to deal with anxiety, panic attacks, and agoraphobia. Another critical component, as I said. Another great thing about this approach is that it's a rational, systemic... Another great thing about this approach is that it's a rational, systematic approach, and one that still allows your analytical mind to go to use. But instead of becoming more anxious, you create new thoughts that lead to healthier beliefs about reality in a way that allows you to feel less anxious, not more. And when I say create new thoughts, I'm not talking about manufacturing untruths. I'm talking about healthier, more accurate thoughts. Another great thing about doing CBT is that it tends to draw your thinking into the present instead of racing into the future. This can be very relaxing and beneficial, and is perfectly complemented by doing activities that induce relaxation. Over time, this combination can not only help with panic attacks, but it can improve the quality of one's life. So, as you're seeing, we have discussed handling the physiological components of anxiety and understanding what drives it, changing your thinking and how your thinking causes it and exacerbates your panic, anxiety, and we've looked at the fundamentals to recovery. You have to keep those in mind too. In tomorrow's installment, I will show you how CBT fits into an overall recovery from anxiety, panic attacks, and agoraphobia, and share with you another critical component of recovery. I thank you very much for listening to this installment, and I will speak with you tomorrow. Take care.